session number 30416, Mr. John Taylor, Reel 3. Now, one thing you mentioned was you got really fit here. Now, what was the PT you were doing? What made you so fit?
Well, I think if you ran up to a Rock End on the top of the headland every day and then did an hour's PE, that would make you fit. And, of course, all this physical jerks and lying flat, arm presses and things.
And you did you feel better for it? You seemed to have done.
Yes. I felt very good, although I did spend the rest of my time getting out of it after we moved on, when things relaxed.
Did you do... they often did aircraft recognition at ITW, so, I mean...
Yes, we did that.
Now, tell me about which system were they using? Because they've got various things that they used in training. I just wonder what they used for you.
We went into a darkened room with a screen, and they shone silhouettes, and we had to recognise what the silhouettes were, playing from different angles. We got quite good at that, and we had to do that. And of course, we're still going on with the Morse and Aldis training. But again, we got Saturday afternoons and Sundays off, and I remember thinking, even as a 16-year-old, this is not the sort of war I envisaged. 19-year-old.
So what would you do on your time off? Because you're in Torquay. I know it was spring. March to April, you know, so
yes.
Early spring. So what would you do?
Well, we went on. I remember we found some caves, and, you know, with exploring the caves, we... used to have a whip round to see how much money we'd got between us, say, you know, four of us. And I've got 3 halfpence, I've got 3½, I've got 4p. And we'd say, well, we've got enough to go to the Hole in the Wall, which is a little pub there, where you get Cornish pasties for 2p each, and half a beer, I think was about 4p again.
So you wouldn't drink much at that stage?
No, we couldn't afford it. Because I think we got 3 shillings a day and made an allocation to our parents, and then stoppages for cleaning materials and things and breakages. So we were always hard up.
Now, anything happened while you were down there? Any incidents? Because you were only there 3 or 4 months.
We used to have to hit and run raids coming over from France, Messerschmitts, and they'd come over and drop a bomb on the town and shoot up things and go away again quickly. And they came right up the harbour, and one bullet actually came through the open window of our room. We were all lying on our beds, so it must have been a Saturday afternoon, and lodged in the floorboard. And another time, we were... Eastbourne College, I think it was, where we used to go and do PE on the lawns there. No, that was Eastbourne. Going ahead of it.
Were the air raids at Eastbourne as well?
Yes.
Okay, right.
So
so no air raids at Torquay?
Yes.
There were air raids at Torquay as well?
Yes. These hit and run raids there, and they dropped... You know, bombing the town, you'd see the hotel had been demolished and things like that. But another thing that happened, I went on leave, and we had to change at Newton Abbott to get back to Torquay. And there was an air raid on Newton Abbott, and a train full of servicemen was bombed. And I got back because I was on the train before this, and 2 SPs turned up at my parents' house and asked where John Taylor was. Said, well, he's gone back. And they thought I was absent without leave or killed or something. Communication, obviously. wasn't very good because I'd been back there all the time. Another nice thing is that my sister and her friend, who was my girlfriend, came down for the weekend, one weekend, and stayed at one of the boarding houses there. And so it was nice being able to show them around.
Now, you were there till April.
Yes.
And then you go to number one, EANS. Yes. I'm not sure.
Elementary Air Navigation School.
Nice. And that's at Eastbourne, and you go there from May 42 to yes. July 42
in the Grand Hotel at Eastbourne.
Were you all in the Grand?
Those of us who'd been, I don't know whether we all went as a number one ITW. I don't know, because you only really wonder whether your own friends have gone with you, and they, most of them had. Again, we're in hotel rooms with ensuite facilities, and the cook had been the cook who originally was the chef from the Grand Hotel, who'd stayed on, and so we got very good food indeed, because he could do things with the basic rations that some of the Air Force cooks couldn't.
And how was the train? This is where you really start going on your navigation, I presume.
Yes. So
what do you remember about? How do they start with navigation?
Triangle of velocities, I think.
Now, can you explain the triangle of velocities? I mean, maybe I don't understand it, but I mean, if you could explain it for people who will understand it.
If you get a line at one angle, a vector, and then you get another line going at a different angle, the angle that joins it as a relationship to those other two vectors. And of course that translates later on is that an aircraft is flying in space, and the wind isn't blowing it, the wind is moving as a parcel, and the aircraft moves in that parcel with it. So if you point at a certain position, because the parcel of air is moving and you're moving with it, although you start off pointing to that point, the course over the ground is different. And the navigator's whole job is to find out what the wind is so he can calculate what the true course. Because obviously to carry on that course you intended, if you're going to go to the left, you've got to aim the aircraft to the right.
By a certain degree.
By a certain degree. And that's the whole art, really, of navigation. Finding your wind in the first place, and then applying it.
Now, so let's take it in there. So how do you find out wind speed? I mean, are you just told it, or do you test it?
You have to find it. You're not told it.
So how do you tell what speed the wind is?
Well, if you go on the course you think you're doing, and then you get a pinpoint, which is a position on that you recognise on the ground, and you relate it to your map, so you know you've ended up there instead of there. Therefore, you can calculate the wind from that, the degrees it's altered you. Another thing, if you're over the sea, you can work out drift, because you can see the lines of white caps, and they're at right angles to the wind. So you have a drift meter, which you spin round, looking down at the waves until you've got them lined up, and you can read off what the wind is from that. Other things we found later on. But mainly it was pinpointing and...
Now, anything else you learn? So that's the triangle of velocities and wind and drift. You know, anything else you learn? What about astral navigation, as they call it? Is it?
Yeah, yes, yes, it. Yes. We had to learn to use the bubble sextant, because on the ship it's a lot more steady, but on an aircraft it's bobbing up and down. You had to keep the bubble steady, and then get the angle. And we had to learn certain prominent stars, and we got navigation tables that you could read off the what their angles should be at certain positions.
Now, how far did you go into that? Because there's quite a... I mean, the Navy spend a lifetime learning this sort of thing.
Yeah.
How far did you go into astral navigation?
Not very much. Not on bomber command. When I went on to transport command for my second tour, we had to do the transport command navigation course, learning all about haversigns and all sorts of things, so you could work out without tables your position. But... No.
But not at this stage. Now, anything, so there's wind speed methods, bubble section navigation, and of course the triangle of velocities. Anything else you were learning about navigation?
We were learning about loop aerials.
What about loop aerials? You lost me a bit.
Well, you'd got radio stations, and you knew, you were told in advance, what they were, certain wavelengths. And on the top of the aircraft, this is in training, you had a loop connected to the wireless set, and as it turned round, if it was side onto the station, you got a difference from the hitting the first bit to the second bit. If you turned square to the station, the signal hit both bits at the same time, and from that you could deduct what the position of the bearing to the station was,
which again gave you a position.
Yes, because we were told the position of these stations. And
so are they like beacons? Are they are they actually beacons, or are they just wireless?
Well, we got beacons as well. But you could tune into the commercial stations sometimes and get... But they change frequencies.
So what were the beacons? Were they have them then? Or
pundits, what they call pundits, were red flashing lights at aerodromes. And they flashed two letters, which changed. But you were told before your flight what the different ones, what stations were flashing what letters, so you could pinpoint over those.
And now, anything else about navigation you're learning? I know it's a lot to remember, and I know it's a long time ago.
It is a long time ago, yes.
Anything else comes to mind that you were taught at the elementary air navigation school?
Well, we're taught navigation on the climb. It took a long time for an aircraft to get to 20,000 feet. Very often you're over France by the time you've got there. So they taught us. Now, you see, again, I'm not sure whether we learnt that here or at Wigsley.
The next one up. Well, let's save that till then.
Yes.
So nothing else comes to mind at the moment that you learnt it. How difficult were you finding it all? You'd liked maths, you'd liked sciences. Mm. Did you fit in with this?
Yes, I had no trouble.
Did some of them?
Yes, but I learned a lot by helping those who couldn't. You know, you're sitting around in your room at night, and they'd say, "How do you do this, John?" And by the time you'd explained it, it had got fixed for more firmly in your mind. I think that's why I became a teacher later.
So to understand it well enough to explain it, it just forced you to take that extra step of understanding.
Yes.
Now, were there any examinations? I mean, how were you tested in all this? Was it a constant? Was it continuous assessment, or was it exams, or was it both?
I can't remember an exam there. There must have been. There were certainly tests of your Morse and tests of your...
But you're really not there that long for a subject of this size. You're only there till July 42.
Yes, and so of course we hadn't flown, so
you hadn't done any flying at
all. No flying at all.
That was the next set
of not to lug out to South Africa.
Now, so what happens next then? Is it the trip to South Africa? Or
no, next we went to Eastbourne.
No, we were at Eastbourne.
We're at Eastbourne. Well, remember I said an incident when we were at Eastbourne.
That's it. Let's have that, yes.
We were lying flat on our backs doing these raising your legs in the air, and the plane came over, and all of a sudden one of the birds, Christ, it got crosses on them. And it was a Messerschmitt that came down, and we've never run so fast in our lives, as he machine gunned down. Nobody got hit, but boy, we scarpered. Things like that happen. But another time, which was more pleasant, we went to the theatre at Eastbourne, and in the interval the chorus, all these young ladies, they joined us in the bar, and those of us who could afford it bought them a drink, and we thought we're great guys mixing with these show people.
How did you get on with the local people generally? I mean, you know,
not much to do with them at all. Very little contact. The only contact we did have was sometimes if they had a church parade. And although I was basically Church of England, they always used to go to the Methodist church.
Why is that?
Well, they say, you know, fall in, right, 3 feet. Catholics and Jews fall out. Other denominations over there. Church of England over there. Church of England would be a huge lot which would march off to the church. Methodists were a smaller group, and we'd go there, and it was a very friendly service. And afterwards, and there were always people saying, would you like to come to the dinner, boys? And we'd get taken to dinner. There's another thing I was going to tell you about. Eastbourne to do with that. It'll probably come back.
Okay, don't worry too. So, you're there for just 3 months, really? Or
yes. Well, we had a sergeant in charge of us. Totally different from the sergeants we'd had at ITW.
In what way?
Well, he was an ex-aircrew for a start. He was an ex-gunner. Big shambling bloke. Very good-natured. And we used to go on route marches. And he'd say, come on, you know, march out of the camp. Down the road a couple of miles, start singing. And then we'd fall out and sit there for half an hour, and those who smoked had a fag, and then we get up and march back. It's in our bags of swank, and so we march back. And that was our route march. The discipline wasn't strict at all now, and you could get out of PE if you wanted to.
So you did.
Well, so I did, yes.
Now, what about, so you then sent to South Africa. This is to the 41, number 41 Air School in South
yes.
Africa. Now, it's in itself, it's a bit of a journey out there. I mean, you only start there.
It was a hell of a journey out there. Yes.
Tell us about the, do you remember the name of the ship you went on? Or?
Yes, it was the, first of all, of course, we had to go to West Kirby, which was a holding station, waiting for the convoy to assemble. Yeah, I met a young lady there that I'd made a date with for the next night. The next night I wasn't there, so I couldn't even tell her I'm sorry, because they wouldn't let us out once we got the orders to sail. Down onto the quayside with our everything in a kit bag, and marched onto this ship, the SS Volendam.
Volendam?
Volendam. It's a Dutch cargo ship converted.
So V-O-L-E-N-D-A-M.
Yes, Volendam. It's a town in Holland.
So what was it like, the departure from Liverpool? I mean, was it a big thing for you, or you know, I mean...
Well, I mean, it was bad enough for us to see where we're going to be for the next 6 or 7 weeks. They'd got the hole divided into layers. And in each layer, you got mess tables with hammocks slung above them. So one tier of blokes slept in the hammocks, one tier slept on the mess tables, and the other tier slept under the mess tables. And I never knew which was best. I slept on the mess table. But if you're on the hammocks, the cockroaches dropped onto you. And if, of course, and if you're underneath anybody's sick, you're liable to be at the receiving end.
It was really crowded then?
Very crowded, yes. And it was a big convoy. There was an aircraft carrier. There was two cruisers and about four destroyers. And any number of troop ships. And we had to go almost to the coast of Brazil, right across to the South Atlantic, before we swung round to the South Africa, because of the U-boat packs. And, of course, everybody got very seasick.
Now, did you get seasick?
For about a day or 2 days.
How bad was it for you?
Not as bad as for some, but you wish you'd never joined. But we ate.
Did it make the mess deck more unpleasant, is I think one way of putting it.
Yes. Later on, I don't know whether it was something that got into the food. I mean, a lot of the diet was corned beef that always tasted as though it got iodine on it. And dysentery broke out. And we were queuing up at the heads, they call them, the toilets. No doors on. And a terrific lot of water slopping around. And you were queuing up to use the toilet. And you were sitting there with another row of blokes facing you. And this water on the floor with the roll of the ship. So as it rolled over, all these lifted the feet up. And then as the ship turned over, it went back. They put the feet down and they had to lift the feet up. And when he'd finished, he went to the back of the queue because he knew by the time he got to the front, he'd want to go again.
It was that bad?
It was that bad.
There anything, did they give you anything? Because, dysentery can kill you if you get it badly enough.
I can't remember them giving us any medicine. It's all right, it's my... No. But
did it last for long, the dysentery?
No. But going back before that, about 4 days into the cruise, they asked for volunteers to wait on the sergeant's mess. We were all NACs by this time, after we'd finished the Eastbourne course.
So NAC means?
Leading aircraftman. You've got a propeller on your sleeve. It's like a corporal, I suppose. Every morning you had to go up on deck and do drill and things. But I volunteered to wait on the sergeant's mess. And
what was that like?
Best thing I ever did. But because what you had to do is to take the meal from the kitchen to the sergeant's mess, and soon learnt to carry two plates on each arm. And but afterwards, of course, you'd saved your food. You'd saved some food, and after you'd washed up and everything, which is not very pleasant, but because there were no detergents in those days. But we sat down in the sergeant's mess and had our own meal. And that went on for about 2 weeks until the colonel in charge of the troops found out. He said, They can't wait on the sergeants. They're potential officers. And we were taken off. And we were very disappointed because it was a beautiful thing to do. And the sergeants were very nice. They were always very, you know, kind to us, polite to us. But I do remember about that voyage, seeing the nurses, every gangway led up to the upper decks, out of bounds to all ranks. Other ranks, out of bounds to other ranks. And you saw the officers and these nurses cavorting up there. I thought, well, perhaps when we come back, it'll be different.
You'll be an officer.
Yes.
Anything else about the trip? It's a long way out to Canada. Well, virtually, yeah, to Canada.
It was about 6 weeks.
It seems to, yeah.
But we got a ration of beer, and we had to queue all around the ship to get this beer, and it was lukewarm by the time we got it, but it was quite precious to us. You'd got a library of scruffy books, and so of course we were sitting round on the deck for most of the day, just reading or passing time away. I remember the evenings though, because the Navy are very good at entertaining themselves, and so they used to have open air concerts almost every night, and the sailors used to perform, and we always used to sit round there as we were moving into warmer climes. We crossed the line, had that crossing the line ceremony.
Well, did you take part, or was it just the crew?
We didn't take part in the concerts. We took part
in the
crossing the line, yes.
So what was it? Explain what crossing the line ceremony was.
Well, first of all, you were told to have bathing costumes on. And then the sailors chased you around the ship with great carving knife, razors, cutthroat razors, about 4 foot long, made of wood. And they'd get you and put you in the barber's chair, and then Neptune would arrive, climb up from the side of the ship with a retinue, sailors all dressed as women, mermaids, and then they put foam all over you and push you into the water. And so that was the...
Did you get a certificate?
Yeah, I've lost it.
They gave you?
Yes, yes.
Was it a laugh? I mean,
it was a laugh, yes. Yes, it was a laugh. And it passed the time like the concerts did. So, eventually we reached Durban.
Was that where you finished?
Yes, where we went right round the Cape of Good Hope and up the other side to Durban. And we were at Colindale Camp.
And when did you get to Durban? Would that be, what, about, you set off, what, June, got there August? It's not quite clear, of course.
Well, it took about 6 weeks.
Well, so you were at Eastbourne till July, sorry, I've got that wrong. So you'd get there probably September, from the looks of things. You start at the school in November.
Yes, so it probably would.
Right. Now,